The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Critical Metals put out a news release recently updating on activities on the ground in the DRC. Here to tell us all about the latest developments, Russell Fryer. Russell, how are you doing?
Thank you for having me, Alistair. Doing great. I'm here on the ground in the DRC, and a lot of activity going on both at Mululu and in Lubumbashi.
What precisely has been going on? You've been talking in the press about your road and about the ESG activities that you're undertaking. So tell us a bit more about those two themes to start off with.
Sure. About 2 weeks ago or so, we lodged a deposit for the contractor to start to rehabilitate the road. They started mobilizing equipment to the road late last week, and equipment is there. The crew is there. And the road that we have to rehabilitate is a 28-kilometer road. We'd actually had done some rehabilitation about 10 months ago, but because the road widened and it would actually improve the road, the locals started using it, and we didn't anticipate the 3 to 4 times increased traffic on it. So this time with the rehabilitation, we're going to use a compactor, a grader. We're going to put some culverts to divert water and then come out with a layer of dolomite and laterite stones in order to be able to use this road during the rain season. And it'll also allow for increased traffic. And in terms of the ESG announcement, we are upgrading our environmental impact study and our environmental management plan, which is something that all mines have to do. We've had one now for about 5 years, but because we've done so much on the ground at Mululu, it's time to actually start to update that and then file that with the mining cadastre there in Kinshasa.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about the road first. Where does this road go from and to? I mean, I believe that sort of ultimately what we're talking about is the route to market for your copper. But so it goes from the mine and then feeds into the local infrastructure and out towards the wider world, I suppose.
Correct. So it's 28 kilometers to the nearest large neighbor. And this neighbor produces about 3,000 tons of cathode per month. So very, very large processing plant. There are several other mines in between on that 28 kilometer road. And what it does is it leads to the Lubumbashi-Lukasi tar bitumen highway. And that is where most of the power lines are. And that's where most of the processing plants are. So our offtake partner is on that grid and about 70 kilometers away from Mululu. So once the road gets done, in fact, I met with the offtake partner last week, and they are keen to receive and purchase as much ore as we can produce, and certainly all the ore that's sitting on the ROM pad right now. We do have inventory ready for our offtake partner, and we will sell that to our offtake partner once the road is rehabilitated in 60 or 90 days.
Are there any permits needed for that inventory to get on the trucks and get onto the road?
Yeah, so we've had our permits. We filed for our permits and paid for them. We've got our road permits for the rehabilitation. We have our certificate of commencement of work. So we are, all of the permits are valid in order to conduct business in the DRC.
So essentially what you're saying is that you've got the product, it's ready to go, and you're just building the building out the infrastructure to get it out and sold.
Correct. And then what we're going to do is, in fact, about an hour or so from now, I'm meeting with the drilling company, and we're going to talk about finishing up the phase one drilling program. And the phase one drilling program, we're going to design around the sulfides and the oxide seams. We think we found a new seam. There's six siltstone seams that we've identified, and the copper mineralization is hosted in siltstone on our deposit. So ideally what we do is we drill some longer holes through the six seams and send that for analysis down to South Africa. And ideally then we figure out how to configure a pit shell, do block modeling, create a mine plan, again, then augment the pit shell, and then going back into mining. We started mining the third week of January 2023, and then we stopped a few months afterwards in order to get a better handle on what the sulfide zone and oxide zones were going to give us.
So just to talk in the broad brush strokes for a moment, you're talking about an open pit with oxide ore, and also some sulfide ore in the open pit as well. Is that right?
Yes. So in our open pit, they were actually mining in 2018, 2017, sulfide ore. And the ore is actually all the grades were all the way up to 30%. So we know that the seam is there. We've actually had some reports that indicate those type of grades. You know, our oxide ores are varying anywhere between 1% and 5%. There is a shortage of oxide ore in the market. So everybody has been knocking on our door asking if we could purchase our oxide ore. And what we might do is might just sell our oxide ore into the market as we mine it to get to the sulfide, and then turn around and look at maybe building a flotation plant to create some type of copper concentrate at the mine. The reason why we're thinking about that is because we can run a plant like that off of gensets instead of the SNEL power grid. There's still power issues in the country. A lot of the factories along that Lubumbashi-Lukasi corridor have been starved of power. And one of the things that I don't want to do is get caught in that similar type of trap. So we're looking at all avenues, particularly on bringing SNEL power into the camp. But if that's not possible, we will certainly look at running plants at Mululu off gensets.
So, are you able to sort of talk about your aspirations in terms of tonnages you're planning to mine, or is it too early for that?
Well, publicly, we've said we want to mine 10,000 tons of payable ore. What it's called is direct shipping ore, or DSO, in the iron ore industry. This would ideally be a mixture of both the sulfides and oxides. And again, it's a bit early to talk about what a sulfide plant would look like, but we could ramp up our production from 10,000 to 15,000 tons a month just by adding more equipment. Now, obviously, we need to delineate the ore body. We need to be confident that we have some type of resource, which we're underway doing now. This year, we want to actually provide a JORC report that will dictate to the market what we have initially, and it will allow us to again do some type of a pit plan. And when we take the ore for testing, certainly leach kinetic testing and the hardness test, we'll be able to optimize that pit plan to either sulfide focus or oxide focus.
And what are your current thoughts on the economic potential of a DSO operation in the current copper price environment?
Well, without getting myself in trouble, it's highly economic at these levels. At $10,000 a ton on the LME price, you know, we're using 7,500 in our models. I looked at 8,500 the other day and was pretty pleased. So as long as we keep our costs low, really where they're at, we will use a mining contractor, which we have quotes on. We will obviously rent the equipment that we need in order to help out the mining contractor. We will be profitable
And do you
at
have
current
any
levels.
idea of the potential life of this operation?
It's early days. The strike length is 3 kilometers, and it's very clear when you look at an aeromag that there is a structure there. We just don't know the depth and the width of the structure. I mentioned 6 seams of siltstone earlier, and roughly from the first seam to the sixth seam, that's about 100 meters wide. Now, I'm not suggesting that's how big the pit could be, but because we have to do more investigation in terms of drilling. But you know, that's a good start on something that we would look to use as an initial pit shell. The depth we know goes down to 100 meters. We've done dipole-dipole and geophysics, so we know that there's anomalies at 100 meters. We know from the past, from some of the previous miners, that they were seeing intercepts and mining ore about 30 meters deep. So there is something there. We just need to drill more in order to delineate it.
So you're talking about drilling. You mentioned drilling earlier and you just mentioned it again. So what does the news flow from the drilling and then from any follow-up developments that come after the drilling look like for the coming months?
Sure. So we have 3 teams that are building or conducting trenching right now. We're doing mapping along perpendicular to the ore bodies, and we're also doing mapping outside exploratory mapping and trenching. We should have another three trenches done and analyzed by Sunday this week. And what we'll do is we will take that data, we'll use an XRF, we will analyze what's in the siltstone, and then we will turn around and look to design a drill program, and it's a diamond drill program. That will finish our phase one drilling program, which is 2,000 meters. We've already done 1,000 meters. We hit mineralization of 18 out of the 24 holes. So we just need just another 1,000 meters of drilling that should be started here in the next few weeks. We'll make an announcement. And then once we get that 1,000 meters drilled and tested down in South Africa, we'll be able to put it in the software and start to look at what a block model and potential mine plan looks like. And that'll all happen over the next few months or so. And in the meanwhile, once we're doing the drilling, we've been initially started the JORC report. We obviously want to get a JORC report out in the market to let them know what we have. At these type of copper prices, you know, even ore below 1% looks interesting. I mean, the neighbors in Zambia are getting excited at 0.5% copper, you know, and we usually just set that aside as waste. So, you know, this type of copper price is highly, highly beneficial to a startup company like ours.
Yeah, I mean, Critical Metals has made no secret of its desire in due course to make other acquisitions or possibly mine in other areas. What can you say about any plans that you might have, ongoing in that regard?
Sure. You know, the M&A was actually sidelined a bit because we had to make sure that Mululu was going to move forward, which it has now. We had issues again with the road and with the rain season, and I needed to focus my mind on Mululu and making sure that was progressing. And it is progressing. So we've entered talks in some of the surrounding countries, you know, countries like Rwanda, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, Uganda. And we will restart those talks. But what's interesting is just last week, you know, I'm speaking to some of the regional people here in the DRC, and there's still opportunities in our neighborhood to add on to certainly the cobalt offering and potentially a cobalt copper offering. So although I have said that we will be very aggressive, and we still will be aggressive in terms of M&A, I had to focus on Mululu before and making sure the road gets moving forward before turning around and re-engaging these talks, which we have done.
Yeah, I mean, I believe there's quite a bit of activity on the Zambian side of the Copper Belt at the moment, just in terms of companies maneuvering around for ground and so forth. Are you sort of paying attention to developments there?
Yes, so we were approached by one Zambian company. The grades of copper in Zambia, in my mind, are not as robust as the DRC. But Zambia has some advantages that the DRC has deficient areas in. So we are open for conversations and negotiations. We would like to actually, if we have Mululu up and running, we'd actually like to add the copper cobalt in the area surrounding the Mululu, because we can actually use some of our infrastructure and certainly our contacts to add on. So if we go into the copper, it would either be somewhere around Mululu or that region, or potentially Zambia.
And it might be useful, Russell, to remind viewers and potential investors and existing investors which types of commodities you're interested in.
Well, you know, it's the A to Z of commodities. So we're interested in antimony and beryllium and cesium and cobalt and copper and niobium and tungsten and tin and tantalum and scandium and rare earths and vanadium. So it's really the A to Z of minerals on the critical minerals list of both the UK, EU and the United States.
Yeah, it's quite an outlook for those minerals, isn't it? I mean, the headlines just keep coming.
Well, you know, without those minerals, economies will die. They will fail. You won't have satellites. You won't have telecommunications. You won't have apparatus such as a laptop computer or the phone in your hand. You won't be able to build skyscrapers above 10 floors or 10 stories in the Ring of Fire. So it's not about EV. It's all about whether you keep an economy going because you have a sufficient supply of feedstock to keep your economy going.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about green energy as well to some degree. I mean, copper is also mentioned as a key element in the green transition. And all those critical minerals that you mentioned, they go into a wide range of green technologies too, like windmills and the like. What's your own ESG footprint to bring it back to the beginning of the conversation? We talked about ESG right at the top. How does the ESG of critical metals itself look on the ground directly and looking out into the wider world?
Sure. The ESG is really a macro and micro. So from a macro basis, I'm excited about cobalt. And why cobalt? Because cobalt's needed for nuclear power plants. Without cobalt, you can't have a high temperature reaction. And so if we're going to move towards a carbon-free era, you have to build many hundreds, if not thousands, of more nuclear power plants, and that takes a lot of cobalt. From a micro side and on the ground, we've built a school. I visited the school again last week and met with the teachers. We have over 60 kids that attend on the junior side and in the middle school side. We're thinking about building another school. We're actually thinking about building a church in the region. We've had DRC Green come out and meet with the villagers and get firsthand exactly all the positive steps that we've put in the region. We've created microeconomies in terms of we've built a large community garden that we've provided all the inputs, and the villagers will or have been supplying us with tomatoes and carrots out of this for our workers at Mululu, and we pay them for that. So, slowly we continue to branch out. We've got a brick making team that make bricks, and we buy the bricks for brick. So that's the first. So we're busy trying to pump money into the village and education into the village. And ultimately, we wish to actually put Wi-Fi into the school and village. Hopefully, that'll happen in 2025, depending on what kind of grants we get.
And ESG was specifically mentioned in your recent news release. Is there anything else you want to sort of add in the context of that release?
Well, in our discussions with the US government for grants and funding, they often ask about, how are the villagers benefiting? It's not just a mining company. And so we've had to lay out what we are trying to do for the village. Again, this village had no school, had no electricity. And so we went and said, okay, we'd like to electrify the village. We'd like to electrify the school. We'd like to put Wi-Fi into schools and then turn around and give them laptops so they can actually learn what's out there outside the DRC, what's out there in the world outside of the continent of Africa. So it's baby steps and small steps in terms of ESG. I know people think it's a light switch we can turn on, but it is small steps. It all takes capital. Obviously, we're going to put some of our profits back into the village and back into the surrounding area. And ultimately, if we can get the proper US grants, we might be able to put in a power line from the nearest transformer along that 28-kilometer road into the village and into Mululu Mine.
So lots of good work going on at many levels.
Yes, indeed.
Russell Fryer, very enjoyable talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Alistair.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.